Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. Before I begin, I want to wish you health and safety during these challenging times, when for lovers of food and drink, it's difficult to socially distance. But knowing those who enjoy food, I'm believing you are cooking more, revisiting the heart of your home. In this show, we talked to three spirited producers here in Billings. I called them up and talked to them over the phone. Mark Hastings, brewmaster at Uber Brew, and now at By All Means, Casey McGowan, distiller at Trailhead Spirits, and winemaker Clint Peck of Yellowstone Cellars and Winery, are continuing to lift our spirits. Casey McGowan talks of changing gears during this COVID-19 pandemic, making hand sanitizer. Mark Hastings shares why he branched out to the West End, and Clint Peck continues to benefit the community through his wine sales. We begin talking to Casey McGowan from Trailhead Spirits.
You know, we were facing some tough times like everyone else, and we still are. I mean, we've been shut down here as a business for almost a month now. We've been considered an essential business, so we can still remain open for some bottle sales for people to come in and buy their vodkas and gins and whiskeys that we have. And we've really scaled that back. You know, it's just a few hours on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday as we get through this to try and get some revenue in the door and try and keep a few people employed.
And do you let people into your tasting production facility, or should people call ahead?
No, the doors are open. We do also offer curbside service where if people wanted to call ahead and have us bring the package to their car door, we can do that. The other restriction that was loosened was our ability to actually deliver direct to individuals.
Right now, aren't you making hand sanitizer also? You're jumping in there and doing that?
Yeah, so we kind of shifted gears like most of the distilleries across the country, realizing that alcohol is really what is the main ingredient in hand sanitizers. And so really what happened here about 3 weeks ago, the World Health Organization and the FDA loosened their guidelines and basically said that instead of getting a formula approved to do this, we're going to provide you with the World Health Organization's formula to make hand sanitizers. And if you follow that formulation, you can forego the application process to have your formula approved and start producing it. So it opened up the gates for every one of us to be able to use the alcohol that we have and that we're making to shift gears and change from making consumable alcohols to making hand sanitizers.
Well, good for you. And who are you sending these sanitizers to?
For the most part, we're focusing on the medical community right now, trying to get it out to them. We're working with the hospitals here in town. There's a group of hospitals in eastern Montana that we're working with. The U.S. Post Office has been getting some of them. When we went to the media with the fact that we are now making it and we've got it, obviously it blew up, which we knew it was going to, and
yes,
we weren't ready for that because there's such a bottleneck in the supply line from alcohol to the glycerin,
yes,
and the hydrogen peroxide go into making it. But really the biggest bottleneck has been on packaging, trying to find bottles to put it in. You know, we've reached out to and looked online at all the big suppliers, you know, trying to find a hand pump like you typically see on a bottle of sanitizer or even a flip top lid or misters, and there's been some real generous community partners who stepped up. Walmart, for example, has been helping us secure 22-ounce bottles.
That's fantastic.
We bought all the inventory that Walmart had here in town. They reached out to the statewide network, and we got a bunch of bottles that came in from Great Falls and Butte. Locally here, Dairy Gold makes gallon jugs for their milk. I was told that they make about 1 million jugs a month, and they've generously given us a deal and donated some gallon jugs.
Well, that's fantastic, and just sounds like there's just been incredible partnership here that's happening. And you're probably finding out about parts of our community that you probably never would have really reached out to.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and then we're supplying prisons. You know, I guess I didn't realize the amount of senior living,
yes,
assisted living homes that there are in this community. I mean, I have a list of over 100 people that I'm trying to get back to and let them know that we've got some. You know, with the new COVID-19 protocol, once this is lifted, everyone that is client-facing that has a retail shop or anyone coming in and customer interaction is going to be required to have hand sanitizer available before they open. And the one interesting one that's really sparked a lot of interest has been the construction industry. They're going to be required to have hand sanitizers on all their crew sites, all their trucks. There's a huge need for it. You know, it's interesting because when we started this, it was, you know, just going to be for a couple of weeks to see if we could help out the community, but I think it's, you know,
no,
of everything
so.
That's gone on, I think it's going to change the way that people think of self-hygiene, and they're going to be required to be doing this, and it's going to be more be a continual need down the line. So kind of our hope is that with us reaching out and getting a little bit to as many people as we can, that hopefully in the future when the supply chains get caught up and there's more available, that people will remember that we're here and we're still doing it, and we plan on continuing to do it as a part of our business operation going forward.
Well, I really applaud you for stepping in and doing all this, and you really have opened my eyes, because I believe that this whole process has added some challenge to what you normally do day in and day out. It's not just making your distilled spirits. There's other steps and other complications to all of this.
Yeah, probably the biggest thing was the logistics on trying to organize and get the supply chain coming in. And then we had to reconfigure a bunch of tanks, modify how we're taking that inventory, moving it from tank to tank and being able to bottle it. We finally got it dialed in here this week, and we've been bottling and labeling bottles for the last 4 days and getting a decent amount of inventory put together for now.
Let's step back a little bit. Now that you're in your new facility, which you've been in for a year and a half, and I almost feel like you just moved, but I know you didn't. You relocated from downtown Billings in that historic depot complex. Did your moving actually help facilitate this transition?
Oh, there's no question. I know for a fact we wouldn't have had the space to do this. I mean, we doubled our space, and right now we've got every table filled with bottles to be labeled in the tasting room.
And that was the main reason that you were moving, is because you wanted to increase production?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we were down there for 6 years, and really by the end of the third year, we had maxed out all the space and reconfigured things, reorganized about 40 different times to maximize every square inch of that building. But we only had about 600 square feet that we had the manufacturing and barrel storage in, and now we've got about 1,500 square feet.
Wow.
For that alone. And then, yeah, that was the reason. I mean, basically, what our problem was is we would fill whiskey barrels to the capacity that we have, and then wait for them to age, and then when we'd harvest them and bottle them, you know, if we did 4 barrels at a time, that would free us up to make 4 new barrels of whiskey, and then they'd sit there for a few years. And, you know, so it kept rotating that we couldn't really expand our marketplace outside of what we were doing because we didn't have the capacity. I mean, we get calls all the time from larger cities wanting some Montana whiskey and whatnot, and we couldn't take the call because as a true production facility, we're fermenting and distilling everything on site, and then we got to let it age, and we just didn't have room to expand into these bigger marketplaces. So for the last year and a half, we've been working on trying to build up some whiskey inventory, and hopefully in a couple of years, you know, when we have enough of that built up, that'll allow us to really expand our footprint with our spirits.
One of the things about being downtown, I would presume that because you were in a historic building, you really couldn't expand that space. I mean, I loved it. It was a charming spot.
Yeah, that was the biggest problem. You know, when I was working with the depot, they had that other building over there that was the old mail room that came up, and it had about 1,500 square feet of space in it, and we made them offer to take that over as well, and they decided that they wanted to turn that into more of a community use center. Some of our other partners downtown came together and said, hey, what if we all did this and we can create the same community feel that we have down here with the guys at Uber Brew that now did BAM over here in this building, and Jeff over at Moab Coffee came into this space, and we really filled up the north half of this building over here with the same three businesses that were side by side downtown on Montana Avenue. So
I think it's really exciting because I believe there's 11 acres around you, and you guys are making it this kind of spirited community that's happening down there, that it, you know, just brewing together. So I'd imagine, you know, there's a lot of collegiate interaction also that's going on.
There's a lot of it. You know, we've worked with the guys over at Uber Brew and BAM. They get all of our used barrels, and they've got a pretty good barrel aging beer stock of inventory going. And Jeff over at Moab has been using some barrels to do some coffee aging in, and then we've created some drinks using some coffee of theirs. So yeah, there's a lot of collaboration between the three of us, and we knew that would continue, and it's kind of been fun to continue it and have more space to really crank out some fun ideas.
I'm really, really excited for you and for our community. Let's just really quickly step back to the historical beginnings of Trailhead Spirits, because much of the grain, I presume, are still coming from your family farm.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, I grew up on a wheat farm, a cattle ranch up in Highwood, Montana, which is about 25 miles northeast of Great Falls. I went to Bozeman, got a degree in agriculture, and have spent the last 20 years working in the insurance industry with Payne West Insurance. I kind of always wanted to be able to do something, back and using your hands and using your degree and things like that and kind of controlling your own destiny a little bit more. And so, yeah, as we started looking at this opportunity to do distilling, it just got more and more exciting the more that I researched it and started looking into our family a little bit more. You know, we got the grains. We didn't need to have a malted grain, which the brewers do. We can use enzymes to create the conversions that we need with unmalted grain. So we can get truckloads of grain from the farm. They take them over to Fort Benton. Well, they mill it and clean it and then bag it and send 50-pound bags to us. So we're using commodities from the farm to be making most of our spirits. You know, there's also some history on the other side of my family. My great-grandfather owned several bars in southwestern Montana. You know, the back bar in the historic Pioneer Bar in Virginia City.
Wow.
It was actually his bar, what he had in Butte at the radio bar. And the history of it is, you know, it came up the Missouri River on a steamboat and was offloaded in Fort Benton and then was taken by cart and buggy to Butte. And so he used that. And actually, when he retired, he sold it to someone over in Virginia City for a dollar. And they've got cool postcard over there that, 'cause everyone asks, you know, where'd you get this big Brunswick bar? And so they had a little deal made up and it has his name on it. And his name was Michael Healy. And so we named our gin Healy's gin after him. So we've got a lot of family connections with, during Prohibition, he was a pretty well-known bootlegger and moonshiner in the Butte area and owned several bars, and having grain on the other side of the family just started making a lot of sense that we actually have a really neat story to tell about 100 years later. Here we are doing this again, so.
It's in your genes, so obviously you were destined to do this, and we're glad as a community. Well, Casey, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for what you're doing right now, and I'm excited for when this passes so that we can all come back to your new tasting room on the West End.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Stella. Looking forward to seeing you out here.
Welcome back to Flavors Under the Big Sky. In the first part, we talked to Casey McGowan of Trailhead Spirits, who have refashioned his business to process hand sanitizers. Before we jump in to talk to Mark Hastings of Uber Brew and the new By All Means, Hastings shares how he is helping in this COVID-19 pandemic.
We kind of have a little bit of a tie-in to Mr. McGowan and his hand sanitizer project. We have some outdated beer we're going to send his way so he gets to skip the two-week wash process of making and fermenting wash before he distills. So we can take beer that's already been through that process, essentially, and he can distill it and go right to hand sanitizer.
I commend Hastings and his fellow brewers for their contributions. With 11 acres on the West End, Trailhead Spirits, By All Means, and Moav Coffee have joined forces to create a spirited and jolted campus with plans for a new amphitheater in the future. Let's learn more about By All Means. I have brewmaster Mark Hastings of By All Means and Uber Brew fame here talking to us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity, Stella. It's good to be with you.
Okay, we are in this midst of COVID-19, let's just start with, how are things going with you and how are you handling this whole situation?
Well, I think there are struggles that come because of COVID-19. Specifically to us, our tap rooms are closed to patrons, so that means a couple of things to us. That means that draft beer is not as available to our customers what it has been in the past, and we're seeing an uptick in something that's new to us, which is our new canned packaged product. So I think we're fortunate in that we have a canning line that allows us to do delivery and it allows us to do curbside to go. So we're fortunate, but it's not making up for the loss that we have of those taproom by the glass draft sales that we normally have.
Well, you need to have, I would say, social closeness in order to enjoy beer together. So that is a challenge. Let's step back a bit. By All Means opened back in November. Can you share with the listeners that whole intention of By All Means? You're collaborating with Ben Harmon, and it's this Uber Campus. So give listeners some background.
So we started Uber Brew about 8 years ago. We brewed our first batches 8 years ago this month and developed a brand that we were very excited about and opened the tap room in June of 2012. By All Means is an extension of that and our sister brand, and also rooted in hospitality and food. I think that's one of the things that makes our projects different from many breweries in the Valley. We all are passionate about culinary, and so it keeps finding its way into our beverage business model. And we believe that food and beer are better together than they are independent of each other.
But what you've done now is you have just ramped up. I mean, I think By All Means is definitely geared for larger production. How big is the warehouse?
Yeah, so when we opened Uber Brew, we kind of outgrew the facility on the first day. And that's a good problem, but also a tough problem. We went back to an original business plan that we had, which included gypsy brewing or contract brewing, and did some production with some companies in Colorado. Over the years, we did Fort Collins Brewery and bottles. And then when we made the transition to cans, we went to Sleeping Giant Brewing.
Right.
Sleeping Giant in Denver is a contract-only brewery. They only make beer for other breweries. They don't have any of their own brands. And so that helped us grow Uber Brew to a point. But beer's supposed to be local, and we wanted to bring that production home, and that's kind of where By All Means came in. So we knew when we built By All Means that it had to be a little different than Uber Brew, because we wanted to flex our creative process a little more.
Do you have numbers on that? What is your production level? You know, what are your goals?
So at Uber Brew, we could do about 900 barrels a year. A barrel is 31 gallons, U.S. gallons. Here at By All Means, we can do about 4,500 barrels.
Wow.
A year. And so that can take care of, with the current cellar capacity, that can take care of Uber Brew's current production with a little growth and allow us to experiment and be creative with By All Means and kind of organically grow that brand by experimenting with new beer styles and old beer styles and get direct feedback from our customers here at the tap room. And so when I say organically grow, I mean we get to try something, serve it, and get direct feedback in the tap room from our customers. So that's really what we're missing during the COVID-19 pandemic.
And we're sad direct too feedback, because we don't get to experience what you're trying to put out there.
People take it home, but we don't get to talk to them about it as easily as we can right here in the tap room. And when I say beer's social, that's kind of what I'm missing most during the pandemic.
You might have to do like a Zoom group of commentators or somebody that actually gets to critique your beers. You should just bring us all in and we could taste your beer together.
I love that idea. I like the idea of a social tasting, and so we get that feedback that we're missing.
So when you are open, how many beers on tap do you actually have for people to taste?
So we can have as many as 16 on tap, and down to about 14 now that we can do to go either in growlers or in cans. And we prefer the cans. It's a little cleaner process, and it's a little better for the beer. Less oxygen pickup is the main reason. Our preferred method is growlers, which is a seamed can that's filled at the time of purchase, or something off of a canning line.
Can you share with the listeners, what is your brew beering style?
The nice thing about By All Means is we designed this facility to where we could brew anything that we can imagine, essentially.
That is just an open, it's endless almost these days, because you brewers are so creative. It's a different beast than I think when you started many years ago.
Absolutely. And the part that we're most excited about is our ability to do barrel and fooder-aged beers. And fooders, for those that don't know, are just large format barrels. So something larger than a 53-gallon bourbon barrel or a 59-gallon wine barrel. Our fooders are 20 barrels, so they're in the 620-gallon range. And,
wow,
you know, they're Bethyls that brewers have used for a while, but for a long time you didn't see them in the U.S., although you're seeing more and more now. And ours are made here in the U.S. by Fooder Crafters of America. They're the first company in North America to manufacture Fooders. So before you had to get them from Europe, you had to get them from Italy, France, or Belgium, and oftentimes they came from vintners.
Right, I was going to say wine.
And so we're excited to have 5 of those and practice some old world brewing techniques and maybe put a new world spin on some of those techniques. So
do you get more complex flavors from brewing beer this way?
There are more variables and more opportunities for complexity. In a lot of ways, even though brewers have been doing this technique, the members of the industry that have been really using Fooders are vintners and the distillers. And brewers are rediscovering wood and the opportunities that it gives us to make complex, interesting flavors. It takes us months and months instead of weeks to produce something out of Fooders and barrels. We generally like Fooder and barrel aged, which we define as something at least 12 months in wood.
Wow.
Versus rested, which is 3 to 6 months in wood.
Well, then if you were to do a lager or an IPA, what is the time span to create that from the moment you start brewing it?
For us, IPAs are a 21-day cycle. That's maybe a little longer than some breweries. We do a lot of dry hopping, which extends the time it takes to produce those beers. Our lager production is about 35 days to 90 days. We just brewed a lager looking forward to times when we can all be sociable again. And so we put an Oktoberfest in one of our clean fooders for a rest of several months. And then we will release that Oktoberfest, hopefully last weekend of September, as is traditional. And we're excited to bring a wood-aged Oktoberfest beer to the Yellowstone Valley. Those are something that are becoming more and more rare. So
I can't wait.
We're already thinking ahead to when we can raise a toast to each other in person.
So what is the most popular beer that you sell?
At both locations, it's a little different, and that's by design. White Noise is our flagship beer and has been since we've opened in 2012 at Uber Brew. And that's an American-style wheat beer, a thirst quencher. We think Montanans are very active and want something quenching.
Yeah.
Here at By All Means, it's an IPA, and it's kind of going back and forth between two IPAs. One of them is Fog Machine, which is a newer hazy IPA, and one of them is 41 Peaks, which is more of a traditional West Coast-inspired IPA. We call it a Rocky Mountain IPA because we think it's somewhere between a New England-style and a West Coast-style IPA.
Fear not, we have not heard the last from Mark Hastings. Before we end the show, I wanted to take us to Yellowstone Cellars and Winery, where we chat quickly with the owner and winemaker, Clint Peck. How are you holding up?
Well, holding up reasonably well as can be expected, I guess. Fortunately, we can be open for bottle sales, case slot sales, with the social distancing and sanitation guidelines that Health Department has established. Unfortunately, we can't do any samples or glass pours or anything like that, but we're holding our own.
We'll back up a little bit. You actually just got back into the United States.
I was in Argentina. I go down to Argentina every winter to work in a small winery and tour some wineries in Argentina. I got back about a week ahead of these closures here in Montana and felt very fortunate to get out of Argentina as they were expelling all foreigners out of that country and just barely got out without having to be quarantined in that country.
Right, because they would have just shut the borders and kept you there.
Right. What they were doing was they were closing the country down to all incoming foreign flights, and if there's not a plane coming in, there ain't no planes going out.
It would be a long canoe paddle.
It would be a tough trip home. Absolutely.
Now that you are back, what is happening at the winery?
Well, we are using this kind of downtime, if you will, to get caught up on some cellar work. My son-in-law, Brandon Skarsten, who's working with me full time now. He's doing most of the labor work of cellaring. We're doing the racking of the 2018 wines, and racking is that process of clarifying the wines, pumping the clear juice off of any solid sediments that filter down by gravity to the bottom of the barrel over time. Well, he's busy doing that.
And you're talking about your son-in-law. Your daughter is back in the business with you also.
Yes, my daughter, Sarah Skarsten, she teaches 7th grade science at Lewis and Clark. And she and Brandon and their girls moved to Billings last summer with the plan that sometime in the near future, they will learn this business and eventually take it over, and I'll continue my profession as being a professional fisherman.
Well, I think you need to still stick in making that wine, too, just to carry the good spirits.
I don't think they're going to exactly kick me out of that job.
Right now, social distancing, and your business is obviously very social and somewhat intimate in ways. What are you doing creatively to get around this and just keep your business going?
Well, we've done what the health department has asked us to do. We've created barriers between us and customers in our sales area so that we keep that at least 6 feet of distance between people.
So someone can call you up and order some wines.
Yeah, they can call up. They can have us get wine ready. Yesterday, we sold a case to a couple who had called, and I actually set the wine out on the patio. That when they called, they gave me the credit card number, et cetera. And we do only allow one customer or one couple in the winery at a time. And that really isn't a problem because traffic has been fairly slow that way anyhow.
Yeah, and that's tough because you were one of the main and major gathering spaces for many people. I think some people called your winery a second home in some ways.
You know, and that's true that now that we've been open 10 years, we've established quite a family.
I have felt that sense of family at Yellowstone Cellars and Winery. So this is why my wine group, the Swirl Girls, that I started with Kara Scher many years ago, when I was studying for my certified wine professional certification, is inviting Clint to our Zoom call. We all have a bottle of his wine, and he will provide us with history and tasting notes.
We'll use whatever tools we have for communication to all get together and watch each other and talk to each other and talk about the wines and do some tasting and a little bit of education, but more is just going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, just being able to gather from a distance. Clint, good luck with everything, and thank you so much for, you know, chiming in during these times.
Well, and thank you, Stella. You know, we just have to do what we have to do, and we'll get through this, and we'll survive it, and we'll grow to be even bigger and better as this passes.
And I think sips of wine really help.
Oh, it helps a lot. It helps the spirit, if nothing else, right?
That's right. Thank you so much, Clint.
Okay. Thank you, Stella.
Perhaps Mark Hastings summarizes the sentiments of my guests the best.
We miss you all and hope to raise a glass with you real soon.
I love it.
And so I'd like to end with a toast. It's a German toast, Prost, which just means to your health.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you, Stella.
Cheers to you, listeners. If you like what we are doing, please go to ypradio.org and make a donation as we are in our silent fundraising drive. Music for Flavors Under the Big Sky has been provided by Parker Brown. Additional funding comes from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanians. Thanks again to you, listeners, for your support. I'm Stella Fong.